Who is God going to be accountable to? He is God. He's accountable to His own righteousness.
Amen.
He's accountable to His holiness. Now, we have to understand something. His righteousness and His holiness are attributes of who He is. We Christians like to think in those terms. There's a little bit of an issue with that, though, if you think about it. We like to think of God as responsible, holy, and righteous, and indeed, those are three parts of who He is. However, that's not the full story with God. What we're really saying is that God is accountable to who He is. Who He is has not changed. It doesn't change, it's immutable, it will never change, and it has always been exactly as is. Now, everything that God does is an extension of who He is. So we have to ask ourselves, what is the first thing that God did? He died. Revelation 13:8. The Lamb was slain, and upon this the world was established. That's what it means in the original language. The Lamb was slain from the foundation of the world. The Lamb was slain, and upon this the world was established. So that was accompanied by the very first and the very last thing that He said. It is finished. John 19:30. It is finished. He said, it is finished. And upon this declaration, and upon this fulfillment, upon this act of God, the world was established. In other words, the whole idea of sin, I think we Christians by and large don't get it. God had allowed Satan into the garden. Ezekiel 31 tells us that he was in the garden. We know that that was the serpent. We know that the tree of knowledge of good and evil was Satan's tree in verse 18 of Ezekiel 31. Okay, so the whole idea of sin in Christianity is completely misunderstood. Why? Because of Psalm 94:20. The throne of iniquity works mischief by the law. Sin relates to law. 1 Corinthians 15:56. Strength of sin is in the law. So we have to define what is sin. If the strength of sin is in the law, then what is sin? Romans 14:23 tells us that whatsoever is not of faith is sin. That completely blows 99% of Christianity's mentality or idea of what sin is. We have this notion that sin is a violation of the law. Now here's the problem with that. There was no law. So what was the sin? Now, people would say, well, he violated the prohibition. It's true, he did violate the prohibition, but I'll tell you something. Sin came prior to the violation of the prohibition. Look at that progression in Genesis 3. The serpent was more subtle than any other beast of the field. And he said to Eve, has God said? Right there, sin could have and should have been cut off. What was the right response to be had at that point? The Lord rebuke you, Satan. She was not to have discussion with the enemy. The tree of knowledge of good and evil was Satan's tree. The prohibition was not just against the tree, but against the angel that the tree represented, because in Ezekiel 31, the trees represented the angels. That's toward the end of the chapter there. The trees represent the angels. Satan's tree represented Satan, and they were prohibited from fellowshipping or partaking of that tree. So when was sin actually introduced? When faith was left behind. When was faith left behind? When Eve started conversing with the serpent. She started entertaining what the serpent was saying. Challenges to God's word. There went faith, there came sin. Eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil was simply a manifestation and an action of what had already taken place in her heart. So sin was much earlier than the tree. Sin was when she engaged the enemy. Once the enemy was engaged, he had her where he wanted her. Regardless of what decision she made, he had her where he wanted her, because she didn't say, the Lord rebuke you. Why did the angels fall? In Ezekiel 28:18. When Lucifer trafficked in his merchandise, what was the merchandise? He was challenging God's righteousness. Pastor Stevens taught us that. He was challenging God's righteousness. Certainly the angels that said God is unrighteous fell. The ones that said God is righteous fell also. Because you can't stand in judgment of God. Do you see what Satan was doing? in an angelic form, he was offering them, do you want the good side of the tree of knowledge or the evil side of the tree of knowledge? Now, of course, he didn't call it that, but that's what it was. Here's the tree of knowledge. Is it good or is it evil? Is God good or is God evil? Obviously, if you said he's evil, you fell, but the tree was good for food, and it was pleasant to the eyes. Eve ate from the good side, and so did a certain number, we don't know how many of the angels. They ate from the good side also. Same fall. Same fall. Now, what was the fall? And when did the fall actually take place? A lot of scholars will tell you that the fall took place when Adam ate from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. I'm telling you, that's not correct. And I'll tell you why that's not correct. The Lamb was slain from the foundation of the world is why. Sin was never the issue, even at that moment, because the propitiation had already taken place. That's one of the reasons why God could be confident enough to put Satan into the garden with Adam and Eve. Because sin was never the issue so long as mankind was on earth. Sin was never the issue. We have this sin orientation in our minds in Christianity. And although we say we are grace, although we say we are finished work, we still have a sin orientation. And I'll tell you why. What's the first thing that people think of when you think of finished work? Sin. Their mind automatically goes to sin. I'm forgiven of sin. Well, that's the good side of the tree, is it not? Yes, the finished work deals with my sins. Don't get me wrong. Yes, it does deal with my sins. But sins have never been the issue. The Lamb was slain from the foundation of the world. So saying it takes care of my sin is simply stating the obvious. It's like saying the sky is blue. It's a truism, but so what? It's always been blue. It's always going to be blue. It has never been anything on earth other than blue. Sin has always been taken care of. We started where it was taken care of. It has never been anything on earth other than taken care of. It has never, not once, been an issue. This is why we can be freed from sin. Satan's plan is to get us to stare at sin. And he's so good at it that even when we think finished work, we think sin. We think grace. What's the first thing we think of when we think of grace? I'm forgiven of my sins by grace. We think blood. What's the first thing that we think? We think blood cleanses me from all sins. And it does, right? The Bible tells us this. But that's not a whole lot more than saying the sky is blue. That's not really getting the full impact of what these things actually mean. That's staying on a very elementary, superficial level. God forbid we stay on that elementary level. We'll never grow into any spiritual capacity at that level. You see, here's the problem with a superficial level. We don't have a superficial God. And if we insist on staying on a superficial level, we'll never get to know in any measure the depth of God and of His character. Finished work deals with sin. You're in your first day of kindergarten. And if that's where you stay, you're not going to get far. It's true. But it's very shallow. Now here's the thing. If whatsoever is not of faith is sin, then sin entered when Eve stopped operating in faith. Sin was consummated when they used their volition apart from faith obedience. But it actually entered when whatsoever is not of faith took place. God knew of sin before He created the universe. Before He did anything temporal, He knew of sin. He dealt with it, and He established the world upon what He did. In 2 Corinthians 5:18, all things are of God, including the fall, because it falls under the category of all things. That means that everything temporal and everything eternal is of God. It falls under the category of all things. So what that tells me is that the fall was of God. How can that be? God is righteous. He doesn't promote sin. No, He doesn't. He doesn't promote sin. That's absolutely true. So how can that be that all things are of God? See, that's the beauty of the volition. Do you think that there's anything at all that God doesn't use? God used our volition, knowing fully well what we would do with it. He created us with it anyway, and that was the plan. We cannot put God into a little box that we call righteousness. What is righteousness? You see, in a manner of speaking, applying the term righteousness to God is a misnomer. Because God doesn't operate in faith, and righteousness only comes through faith. God operates in the things that He knows. God cannot possess faith because He operates in what He knows. Since He has the ability to control all things, all power and all knowledge, there's no such thing as faith applied to God. Faith is only applied to us. It cannot even be applied to the angels. That's why angels cannot be saved, because they cannot operate in faith. And salvation is by grace, which comes through faith. Angels cannot receive grace, because grace comes through faith. It is of faith that it might be of grace. And so angels cannot be saved, not because they're perfect. Adam was perfect. Angels cannot be saved because they have no capacity to operate in faith. They see God face to face. Even the demons still have access to the throne of heaven, and we see that in Job chapter 1 and Job chapter 2. That when the sons of God were gathered, Satan was among them. And so even they still see God face to face. They recognized Him when they saw Jesus. And Jesus told them to be quiet. And so this is how it works. Sin was an integral part of God's plan for manifestation of who He is. I wish we could get this through our minds. Because if we could get this through our thinking, it would completely revolutionize our ability to deal with our own mistakes or with the mistakes of other people. Because if I fail, then all I have done is given God the opportunity to manifest His character, which was why I was created in the first place, as the original language of Genesis chapter 2 and verse 7 reveals. Anytime I fail, God has the opportunity to reveal character. Anytime you fail, God has the opportunity to reveal character. So what I do is I either accept God's character or I reject God's character. So if I live in condemnation, or if I live in unforgiveness, and the two are really two sides of the same thing, one is inward and one is outward, but in any case, what I'm doing is I'm rejecting God's character. On the other hand, if I know how to practice recovery when I fail, because I don't want to be in the place where Adam was through his own decision. And this was really where the fall came in, where he separated himself from God. God did not separate Adam from himself. That's the fall. So a person refuses to appropriate the provision that God has done is living in the effects of the fall, not so much when he fails, but rather when he fails the grace of God. And you could say, in a paraphrase to that, when he rejects the character of God. Because that's all it is. Condemnation and unforgiveness are simply rejecting the character of God. And so now we have God, who is perfect, of course, finished the work, and upon this established the world, puts Adam into the world to manifest the character of God. So what was sin? A provision. Is it okay if we sin? No. From the standpoint where we don't want to separate ourselves out of the union with God. Here's the thing. Whatsoever is not of faith is sin. Now, here's the other part of it. And this is a part that we sometimes hear and completely miss the whole point of it. Ephesians 2:15. And then it continues obviously in 2:16, but 2:16 gives you the mechanism for 2:15. In 2:15, of the twain, us and Christ, He made one new man. In 16, He did it by the mechanism of the cross. So what is sin? When I don't function in the one new man. In other words, the one new man has a few issues. And sometimes there's a little bit of a palsy that takes place. Now, I'm not in positional truth, in experiential truth. This is an experiential reality, not a positional one. The one new man has a few issues. And one of those issues is that not all parts of the one new man always function as they're supposed to. Just like a human being who has an illness. Now, when the cross is present in a believer's life as a practical reality in the details of life, the one new man functions properly. Except as soon as I don't pick up a cross, and most of us go from moments of picking it up to moments of putting it back down again. When I don't function with a properly picked up cross, I'm operating outside of the one new man. In other words, I'm operating outside of who I actually am. What does that look like? Not in condoning it, but simply in illustration. It's like a drunkard. We've all heard of people who are normally civil, cordial, polite, know how to get along, become these uncontrolled animal types, do things that they otherwise would normally never do. Some of them get violent, some of them get weepy, whole gambit of things, because the emotional center is affected. It's very similar to what it's like, spiritually speaking, when a person puts down the cross. We're like the drunkard. The drunkard will not be who he is when he's drunk, because that area of the brain is not capable of functioning that would control him. As soon as he sobers up, he's a totally normal person again. When he's drunk, he's not normal at all. There you have the difference. When a person lives in the old sin nature, they're living in sin. They're not operating in faith. The only way for me to operate in faith is to have a cross present in my life. I operate as who I am when I'm operating in faith with the cross operating in my life, because I am the one new man. And now, my life becomes a manifestation of Christ, because it's the life of Christ in Galatians 2:20 inside the man. And that's what's being manifested. How did I get to the oneness of the one new man? Through the cross. Why did the cross take place? Because of sin. Sin, from God's perspective, was a mechanism. Am I justifying sin? Absolutely not. Am I saying it's okay to sin? Absolutely not. I just finished saying it. When I live in sin, I'm operating outside of who I actually am. I'm operating outside of Christ, outside of the one new man. But was also, at the same time, my provision. And so the believer never has to worry about sin except simply to confess it when it takes place. To be one mind with God, just the same way that my hand is one mind with my brain. That's it. Now, if you've ever seen somebody with an illness such as Parkinson's or one of these other neurological illnesses, you'll see that their body doesn't always do what their brain tells them to do. And their body will do some strange other things like tremors. And sometimes it's difficult to control their motions. And this is kind of like carnality in a believer. Now, why is it that this carnality can be in the one new man? So that love can be made manifest. Because we don't need patience and kindness if we are perfect. But if we are imperfect, then God has a way to manifest it. Am I saying carnality is a good thing? No. I'm saying it's something God uses. Have you ever had, let's say in your garage, a hammer or a saw? It's not in great shape. I have this little sledgehammer in my garage, and the little part that holds the head on, the middle of that slipped out, and I keep having to push it back in. And so if it slips out too far, you can imagine what happens, right? The head comes off in mid-stroke because I'm about to hit something with it. This is kind of like us. I can get things done so long as I'm patient, and I'll keep pushing it back in, but it takes some patience. But at the same time, there's something kind of weird about it. I like that hammer. I have to be a little patient with that hammer, but I just like that hammer. I have had it forever. I don't want to get rid of it. God loves us. He doesn't want to get rid of us, so He's patient with us. But you see, that's the delight of God, that He has someone to be patient with. Ezekiel 33:11 tells us this. God has no pleasure in the wicked perishing, but in that the wicked comes to repentance. How does that happen? The mercy of God. God's patience is how it happens. So it tells us about God's mentality, that God isn't worried about sin. Sin's not even an issue to Him. God wants to manifest His love. That's the issue to God. And the only time when sin becomes an issue is when it obstructs my life with Him. If whatsoever is not of faith is sin, and how can two walk together unless they are agreed? And that whatsoever is not of faith and walking together with God don't take place if there is sin. But it does take place when I exercise faith towards what He has done. But in that exercise of faith, He gets to reveal His character. And so what is sin really? A denial of God's character. Sit right there. It has nothing to do with the law. So Paul said, all things are lawful, but not all things are expedient. Christ was the end of the law. He was the fulfillment. Okay, He was the law. Christ put the law aside. When it says that Christ was the end of the law, let's get a little bit deeper than the superficial. Where there is no law, there is no transgression. The law introduced the transgression. It defined it. You have a speed limit sign, it says 30 miles an hour. If you're doing 30 miles an hour, you're fine. If you're doing 35 miles an hour, you're breaking the law. Can you do 35 miles an hour in a 30 mile zone? Yes. Is it dangerous? Usually not. Can you get a ticket? Yes. Is it dangerous? Is it unreasonable? Probably not. I remember when I was a kid, I was 18 years old working at a summer camp, and as a guest speaker, for some reason during the counselor's weeks, they would always have these guest speakers, and one of them was a judge that came up to speak to the counselors. And he said the reason why there are so many speeding tickets is because the roads are made for speeds higher than the speed limits. And so people actually drive on the road according to the quality of the road and what the road is capable of more than they do according to the sign with the speed limit on it, and they get tickets. Maybe it's a big racket, I don't know. You go out west and their speed limits are comparable to their road surfaces. You drive in a place like Idaho and the speed limit is 80 miles an hour, and you don't want to drive any faster than that, because then in the car you get a sense of this is not going to be safe. If you drive 80 miles an hour where the sign says 30, you're going to get a ticket. It doesn't matter what the quality of the road is. It doesn't matter what the quality of the road is. You're going to get a ticket. Imagine that they took away the sign. And you're doing 80 miles an hour. You're not going to get a ticket. The only reason you get a ticket is because that speed limit sign is there. If you take away the road sign, no transgression. Now, if you have a street where the sign was 30 miles an hour, but you took away the road sign, that takes away the transgression. It may not be a good idea to do 80, but there's no transgression. Really, that's what it's like with us. It's not always a good idea, and that's the problem. It's not so much that it's a transgression, it's just not a good idea. Why? Because it opens up all kinds of doors to things that take us away from fellowship with God, to things that cause us to remove ourselves from Him, the things in many cases that will harm us. But it's not because of the transgression. We think in terms of transgression because of our culture. Do the right things, you'll get ahead. Do the wrong things, you'll be punished. Well, God is saying all things are lawful, but not all things are a good idea. And so we don't want to think in terms of law. Why does the enemy insist on lawful, lawful, not lawful, not lawful, lawful, not lawful, and so on? So that we never get beyond what is lawful or unlawful and operate in that which is actually beneficial. It's a trick. And so he'll bring things like, on the one hand, condemnation, and on the other hand, self-righteousness. And where there is condemnation, he's doing the same thing from a different side as where there is self-righteousness. What's he doing? He's setting us up to fail. Because both of them are sin orientation. I don't sin, or I've sinned. Same problem, same tree, different sides. Same tree. Here's a catch. They ate from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and as a result, they separated themselves from God. Why does Satan make an issue of sin? Because we will go wherever we look. My brother, wonderful man, I never want to drive with him. Because he will go wherever he looks. And if something on the side of the road catches his attention, all too often he'll be going to the side of the road. But we are all like this. We go where we look. It's one of the reasons why you have to guard your heart. Be careful what you look at. Be careful what you receive. You will go there. Satan says, be occupied with sin, whether it's at the good side of the tree or the evil side of the tree. It doesn't really make any difference, whether it's through self-righteousness or through condemnation, whether it's through saying I'm doing well or I'm doing poorly. He doesn't care how you do it, just be occupied with it. Even if it's subtle, the more subtle, the better he likes it. Harder to see him. And so, we Christians think finished work and the equivalence in our mind, although we don't see it as an equivalence because that's not the mental exercise we go through, but we are drawing an equivalence, a connection to sin. Finished work, sin. Grace, sin. Character of God, sin. God is very forgiving, sin. God is merciful, sin. God is righteous, not sin. We're sin occupied. Why? That's what our satanically controlled culture has taught us to be. Remember, he is the prince of the power of the air. So he has taught us how to think in terms of sin. Why? You look and then you go. And it doesn't have to be outward, and if it's not outward, all the better. Because you see, here's the catch about outward sin. It's easier to recover from. But if you can be a good moral person who simply, let's say, critical or judgmental, he loves you. Oh man, he's so happy about you. You are the ultimate victory. Because you'll never see it coming. You'll never see the sin that's in your life. You will be blind as a bat to that sin. I mean, yeah, you can go out and make dreadful mistakes, which are destructive, don't get me wrong, but they're obvious. I'll tell you what. For every heroin addict, I would dare say there's many, many, many self-righteous people. How many heroin addicts eventually in their life overcome heroin because it's so difficult? How many self-righteous people overcome their self-righteousness? I dare say a whole lot more people, percentage-wise, overcome heroin than self-righteousness. Yet in Proverbs chapter 6, the pride that is the result of self-righteousness is the sin that God hates the most, much more than heroin. Satan's got it to an art form. He plays us through our culture and our upbringing and through morality, through the things that we consider to be good, though we've taken God out of the equation. And I'm not saying morality is not good. Far better as a society to be moral than immoral, obviously. But you see the occupation with sin? Because so long as we're occupied with sin, we're stuck at the tree of knowledge. We're separated from Him one way or another. And we'll say we don't sin because we're Christians. But so long as we don't sin, we're fine. And God says, even if you manage to do everything perfectly, you still have this little problem that sin is in your DNA in Romans chapter 7. So what it shows me is the craftiness of the devil has utterly deceived the vast majority of humankind. Because I can't get away from it. I don't have to get away from it. It's not an issue. Satan wants it to be an issue, whether to the positive or negative, because where I look is where I'll go. So I'll either be busy being self-righteous and trying to avoid sin, or I'll be busy being condemned and finally giving into it. But I'm never actually going to be freed from it. And God came to free us from it. We have to have a proper understanding of sin. Why do we emphasize sin more than we emphasize Christ? And we say, no, we don't. Christ died for my sins. That's only partly true. Christ didn't die for my sins per se. Ephesians 2:16 says Christ died to make me the one new man with Him. And in making us the one new man, He dealt with our sin. So really, the dealing with our sin, you could say in this one respect, it's a byproduct. It's a secondary result, a very beneficial secondary result, but nonetheless a secondary result. Because we were not created to be gardeners. We were created for a much greater reason than that. And the only way that could take place was to become one with Him. So here's the thing. The bride of Christ must have Christ's righteousness. Otherwise, she's not a suitable bride. He had to have one of the same kind. Just like He said about Adam, He needed one of His own kind. Christ needed one of His own kind. The only way to make one of His own kind was to make her to be one with Him. And now she's one of His own kind. Not because of her sinlessness, but because of who He made her to be. See, that's why Satan loves when we're occupied with sin. Because then we lose the whole point and we never get to experience who we actually are. Never get that confused. It's not about sin. Never has been. It's not about sin. It's about something far more valuable. Sin is simply a tool. Sin is simply a tool. And it's a tool that God used because it happened to be there. But it's the only way at the same time that He could manifest who He is. Never get hung up on that.